Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for Saturday, December the 26th, the day after Christmas in 2009. I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The snow that we had last Saturday is being melted away by the rain today. I'm honored to bring to you today Michael Marklin. Michael is the author of the book, Why the Hell Can't I Find a Good Man? He is also a single parent, father of four children, born in Jamaica. He now makes his home in New York City. Excited to hear what he has to share with us today. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Michael.
Thank you so very much. Thank you for having me on.
It's just an honor and a pleasure to have you here with us today. This is a topic that, I mean, for eons and eons and eons, women, I would say, are continue to be interested in. But I don't really think it's going to maybe be as effective until men become equally as interested. In preparing for this interview, it pulled up some familiar and uncomfortable feelings for me, those being one of them. This seems to be a topic that women are very interested in and want to know how to resolve this item. But until men become equally as interested, I'm not so sure how far forward we're going to go as human beings. I wanted to ask you, why did you decide to take on this familiar yet heady topic?
Well, my daughter is first year in college. At the time when I thought about having this conversation with her about, you know, her becoming a woman, or, you know, her approaching those years of teenage dumb, as I call it, where she started looking at boys. My first inkling about that was her keen interest in B2K, and the posters were starting to pop up everywhere, and, you know, boys' names were starting to pop up on little scribblings of paper. So I decided at that time that whether I was ready or not, I should take an approach to it. So I started out writing notes. We started writing poetry about our feelings and how I felt when I was a teenager and about girls. And it evolved into letters. And I just realized that at that point, I had an obligation, not just to her, but to a very large family of girls. I happen to come from a family of six boys and six girls.
Whoa.
And from those six boys, well, I have six brothers, actually, and six sisters. So that's 13 of us, and from that,
wow,
those 13, I myself have 26 nieces.
Mm.
So I decided that, you know, based on the quantity of questions that were generated by my efforts to educate them, that I should say something and say it concretely. So I started writing, researching and writing down my thoughts, and it evolved into this book.
Okay. And so we have Why the Hell Can't I Find a Good Man, which for our listeners here at Off the Shelf is available at different books retailers, including Amazon.com. So you can go there and read some of the chapter excerpts from the book. Michael, I wanted to ask you, for our listeners here at Off the Shelf, if you could just share with us some of the topics or chapters that are covered in your book, Why the Hell Can't I Find a Good Man?
Well, I took it by, per, you know, as per topics I was talking to her, I just kind of broke it down into a whole bunch of topics, which I had to then break down into other relevant topics. So to begin with, I opened my book with my preface, which says, it's a big panty hunt, meaning for a woman to understand exactly what a man's, what his intentions are, you have to start out with the very, very basic drive of nature, which is procreation. And, you know, that men are motivated primarily by what they want to get from women, and of course nature wants to procreate. So it is basically about sex. It is about that attraction that is natural. It's not that men are whatever, but we are attracted to each other that way. And it's just up to women at some point to cipher out who's just there because of their sexual attraction and who's there for in something that is more long-term, like a relationship. As far as the next chapters go, I can run through some chapters and then you could probably follow up with your particular questions. The book is broken down into four parts. As I said, the title of the preface is "It's a Panty Hunt and You Are the Prey."
Okay. And then you go into that, and then
this section, first section, is about men. The next section is about women. The third section about the changes that I believe women have to make. And
okay.
Part four is called "It's All Up to You," which means,
okay,
you know, it all comes back around to being, you know, your decision. I believe that women are perched to make this decision, but they've been brainwashed into thinking that, you know, they're hunting. They're the ones who have to wait around for men to make this decision. But ultimately, it is the woman who makes these decisions. And therefore, I believe if they wake up to the fact, just not just individually but collectively, and they're cooperative with each other and they're empathetic to each other, then the male mindset has to change. And when that changes, then more eligible, more decent men will begin to appear from the masses of just men.
Yeah, you as a woman, and I'm sure just even from women that I know and can imagine what women are thinking, you would think that if a man is a decent human being, he's going to behave that way anyway. He doesn't really need prompting from a woman to behave. If he's a decent human being, he doesn't need prompting from a woman to behave that way. It almost sounds like, and again, at the start of the show, I said, I think these are great, and I do think that as women, we need to take put more wisdom and forethought into the men that we choose to allow, you know, to be with, even just on one date. So I do believe that, but I think until more focus is placed on the man and saying to not just how to keep a man from cheating, but to men how not to cheat. Until some more of the focus is placed on the man, it just seems like the bulk of it keeps being tossed into the woman's corner, that this is what you've got to do to make it stop. This is what you've got to do. But more of a shift or balance where men are told, this is what you can do to not cheat. This is what you can do to handle your anger. I think then we may see more strides going forward. And as long as it's one-sided, I don't know if we're going to see much of a result. Go ahead.
I agree with you totally where that is concerned. But I also believe that question, I could take that one so far back. But let me just be as brief as I can. As far as us African-American men are concerned, two things. Most of us are reared by women. We're reared by single mothers. My motto always is, if you want better men, you have to make them. And there has to be a conscious mindset over time that I'm putting this young man into the world to be a partner to someone else somewhere down the road. And I have to instill certain principles of gentility, of decency, of how to treat a woman, and that woman would be you, his mother, at that point. I believe that's the long-term goal. I believe that's the long-term method of dealing with that. In terms of short-term, us men African American men, we have extremely poor role models when it comes to being monogamous. Outside of that, we have all the other decent tendencies, and yes, those do jump out. But we're socialized to think that the alpha male is the man. That is who we should aspire to be. And when we're among our peers, we tend to follow that herd instinct. So even if our better thought says that this is not what we should do, we tend to go along with because of the peer pressure or the opinion of our peers in our behavior. So it's kind of a catch-22 situation to me. So my thing is, women also tend to be less proactive in the actual behaviors of acquiring what they need. In other words, a woman is going to an event where she thinks she's going to meet a man, and she'll know this a month ahead. She'll start looking at her paycheck. This part is for, I got to buy an outfit, I got to buy shoes, I got to do my hair. And that could amount to decent sums of money, And she's running around, she's frantic all day, her makeup's got to be right. There is no actual person that she's going to meet, but just the possibility of meeting someone gets her excited, gets her hormones up, gets her feeling hopeful. And then when she gets to that event, she's, all of that proactivity is gone. She now shelves herself and hopes that someone will find her attractive and see all the work that she put into herself, and that constant, and most of the time she ends up being disappointed because she didn't even meet anyone, much less to attempt to make a love connection or a friendship or anything worthwhile. So to me, that part of it needs to be fixed also. I believe that, women, it is women that men seek. It is, it is a quality woman. And if you're that woman, I believe that you have to say so. You have to be a little bit more proactive in the process of getting what you want. And in the book, I talk about the fact that women have kicked down doors in industry. They've taken their captains of industry. They've taken over corporations. They run Fortune 500 companies. And yet they sit around still waiting for this handful of men that never seem to emerge. I believe that women have to get into a mindset that they too can go choose who they want.
Yeah, exactly. I do agree. There's still a lot of old-fashioned thinking that years ago may have worked because so much was different, to a point may have worked. But this doesn't work today. The world has changed. So to continue to hold on to old things that might have worked better for our grandparents or great-grandparents, some things are timeless, of course, and some things, as the world changes, have to change, or you're going to be constantly behind the eight ball. I wanted to ask you, and you had said at the start of the book that, the panty chase for men, and that basically that's what all men, just for procreation, that's what they seek at a basic level. So I wanted to ask you, when men say it's natural for them, because I actually got to tell you, I hear that coming more from African-American men than some other men of other cultures. And I hear men say all men cheat. I've asked other men from other cultures that, and they said absolutely not. They were just totally the opposite, like absolutely not. To me, when people say that all men cheat, it sounds like that the good Lord created men that way, and so they have no responsibility for whether or not they cheat because that's the way God created them. If you have an issue with it, dear woman, then you take it up with God because that's the way God created men, so that they would cheat on their wives and their girlfriends. And men have absolutely no control over this because it's the way they were created. It's almost like saying that they are a sexual puppet. I wanted to know what your thoughts on this are.
Well, I also, you know, I examined that behavior in myself and my peers, and I examined that from a barbershop mentality. I actually frequented over 30 barbershops over the period of time when I was writing this book, and you know, just to pick up on some of the local mindset, as to just to confirm certain things or to dispel certain things. And somehow while I was there, I would try to instigate a conversation towards certain topics just to get different views. And, you know, being in my mid-40s, I've had my experiences through college, and, you know, I've lived, you know, vicariously through my friends with certain other instances. So I'm sitting at a place where I would say I've gone through what I call the alpha male stage of my life. So I understand the phenomenon as to how it affects black men and other races. My theory is, based on what I've read and based on my research and history and the fact that the African-American peoples who, on this side of the world, who emerged from slavery, I consider that this is probably the youngest race on the planet. We were separated from our ancestors by this midship, you know, slavery for so many years. So the emerging culture on this side of that divide has left us with a very short history. What is extremely visible in our past as we look back at the tapestry that shaped us is the fact that we were studied like animals during slavery. We were used to breed a superior product for, you know, some slave owners, some masters. And I believe that somehow, because of the fact that we're not coming from this real ancient culture of cohabitation and you know, on a monogamous basis, I believe that some of those ripples are still very evident in our behavior at this point. And I believe that kind of sanctioned polygamy, which, you know, only had to do with us as a people. I mean, those were instilled by other people who owned us. You know, you would find the biggest, strongest male, and you would mate them with the biggest, strongest female. I believe some of those things are still inherent in us, and I believe 40 acres and a mule later that we still have those tendencies, and they're plaguing us as a people. That's not an excuse. That is my observation as an adult male of who we are and where we are and what we do. In terms of the fact that it's just a biological instinct and we're slave to it, it's just something that is propagated. I mean, as a man growing up, see, I believe that there are simple truths that women are not aware of about men. And one of those facts are that other men look at men who don't hone their skills as a woman magnet as lesser men. The man who has the most, who is the most magnetic sexually, who can attract the most money, the most women, the most playthings, is the man. That is our role model. And until that changes, and the man who has the strength to be monogamous and to attract, you know, a decent woman and plan ahead for a monogamous relationship, until he's not an outcast, then men will come along and they will go through this, what I call our unsanctioned rites of passage into this manhood where we become, you know, whatever we have become as a result of what we've done. you know, and the problem is that so many broken homes, so many single mothers later, we now realize that this is the path that we need to take to stability and to prosperity as a people.
I appreciate your thoughts, Michael. I was going to ask you next with the and you just briefly touched on it with the broken homes and so much is placed on the woman to raise the man, to be a monogamous man, to pick the right man, to do this and that, keep the man from cheating. And it's almost like the guy is totally free of any responsibility, and it just keeps rolling back to the woman. I wanted to ask you, with when you think about the broken homes, when you think about a man who may create children with three or four different women or more, and there's nothing thought of it. A man never gets pregnant. You can't tell whether he's expecting a child or not because his body doesn't change. With all these, and he can still be highly respected in society, as are many pro athletes and many businessmen who people knowingly know they cheat on their wives like they're drinking water. So with all of this suffering and so much abuse that goes on between humans, wars, and we could go on and on, verbal abuse, physical, financial, just in relationships alone, do you think we realize, as humans, do we realize what this behavior and mindsets, what it could potentially cost us, not only as couples but as families, communities, and I'm talking across all races, and cost the human landscape at large. If we continue down this path, no one may trust anyone else. What could happen to us? Do you think that we stop to think about this?
I am so concerned about that. And as I speak to you, my research for my next project has to do with what I call relationship genocide. And the whole process of us not recognizing that this is the undoing of us, and that we'll wake up one day and we'll totally forget what a relationship is. And in so doing, we'll have broken down the very molecule that holds the compound of a village, of a community together.
Yes.
And I believe that's where we're headed. So, you know, that is something that I'm actively researching, and you know, I'm really very excited about that. You know, I do believe that Hill Harper has tried to address that in his book Conversation, and you know, he addressed it. I was very excited to read his book to see what he had to say on the subject after I'd done my research, because I didn't want his ideology to taint my research. But I did read it on a plane on my way to Jamaica, and I was impressed with what he saw. It is the same cry that Bill Cosby has in Come On People, you know. It's that cry, it's that foresight to see that we're undoing ourselves by undoing the very basic unit that holds us together as a society of people. There are other issues that play into this, but until us as men begin to understand that we are the architect of this unbecoming, so to speak, then nothing is going to change. And I'm really glad to see that there are so many other young Black authors who are rising up and dealing with this issue from a point of view, which tells me that there's a consciousness that is coming into being among men of a certain age that this is foolishness that you're doing.
Yes,
this is really asinine, and that we're killing ourselves. We're overdosing on this dopamine that we get from this pleasure principle of just panty chasing and whoremongering and being irresponsible and going after risky situations because they give us a thrill. Yeah. I believe that we are coming into that consciousness. Is it soon enough? Who knows? Only time will tell.
Yeah, I agree with you. I hope that people can step back instead of looking at their own individual situations. Of course, we all have the right the God-given right to make choices over our own lives, but each of those choices are going to yield a result. And being that we all are connected as humans across races, ages, genders, the choices we make not only going to impact us, but other people as well, whether we like that or not. And so I think that we do need to step back and look at, okay, let's look at 40 years from ago and look at now. Are we moving in the right direction? If not, we need to stop, put on the brakes, and examine this, and then see what is another better route to take. For our off-the-shelf listeners, we are speaking with Michael Marklin. He is the author of the book, Why the Hell Can I Find a Good Man? He's on the internet at www.michaelericmarklin.com. That's spelled MichaelEricMarklin.com. Again, MichaelEricMarklin.com. I encourage you to go over to his website. His book is available also through booksellers and Amazon.com online. And the title of his book, Why the Hell Can I Find a Good Man, Michael Marklin. I wanted to ask you next from your book, what does UPS versus FedEx stand for?
Versus FedEx. That was a spiritual analogy for me as far as women are in their receptiveness. I believe that every woman emanates a prayer daily, whether consciously, vocally, spiritually, or intuitively, to ask their being of preference, whether they refer to that being of preference as being God. Of course, I grew up in a Christian home, so to me it's God. And I'm just saying that, I'm just expressing that in a very wide sense of the word so as to include everyone.
Okay.
I believe that there's an intuitive prayer that goes out, Lord, find me that right person, bring me that soulmate, bring me, you know what I feel, Lord, you know what I need, you know I just want to be happy, you know I just want a man who's going to love me and support me and treat me like his partner and his equal, who's going to respect me, to whom I can be a woman, I can be female, I can be vulnerable, and I don't have to put up this front as if I'm a man in a man's world. I could just be a woman, let him be a man, and we could just exist in bliss. I believe that prayer is within every woman. I believe that whether you say it aloud, whether you voice it with your girlfriends, whether they're shouting down with men, kill the bastards, you know, men are no good, whatever, you know, all men are cheaters, all men are liars. I believe that intuitively every woman has that cry silently somewhere in their being, in their spirits, in their soul.
And does a man have that is also, or just women?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, men do. I just believe that men believe that because there's a physical surplus of women that when they're ready, they will find. And I'm addressing it to women because my book is addressed to women. And one of the goals of my book is that they identify their own needs and redesign a plan to fulfill those needs. And that they also recognize the toxic thought patterns that suppress that feline feminine urge, that very private, intuitive prayer within themselves. And they let that pull them and magnetize what they need into their lives. So I'm saying if there's that prayer, then I believe that there are answers to every prayer. You just have to be able to recognize it. It's not going to come with fanfare and trumpets blaring and your man is going to appear and arrows are going to be pointing to him and it's going to be, that's your man, that's the guy. You're going to get this special feeling. It could be somebody next door. It could be the guy who you've been hanging out with and buddy-buddying and talking over your female problem. What I'm saying is UPS or FedEx, do not find yourself caught up in expecting yours to come on the UPS truck when it's on the FedEx truck. Be very open-minded about where your parcel is coming from when it's shipped from God to you. Be open-minded that it might be a blue-collar worker, it might not be the Wall Street guy. It might be a mechanic down the road. It might be the guy who's putting in the cable system in your house. You have to be very open-minded to understand that any one of these, from this multitude of men, any one of these might be the one who God is directing my way to be my man, speaking from the point of view of a woman. So you have to be open to that. You know, a lot of times women are shielded, and they're shielded for a good reason because they've been targets for so long of abuse, of misogyny, of just men taking, you know, emotional abuse of them. So they've developed so many defensive skills that they've lost their offensive skills to see something and to be able to recognize the hidden opportunities embedded in their everyday encounters with men.
Okay.
So I'm advocating that when a woman, you know, if you find that you can't find that in yourself, then I am proposing that you're too caught up with your world around you and you're going from one situation to another without taking time to get in touch with that intuitiveness within yourself that will identify who you are truly so you can magnetize what it is you need and it will come to you. But if you believe that, you know, you are, you know, this high-profile person driving this BMW and you live in this house and you're going to magnetize a man of your stature, you will magnetize those guys. But is that what you need inside of yourself to feel complete as a partner? Because he, too, will know that he is a prize. And when a man knows that, usually, you know, the whole platform, the whole soapbox effect comes out where, you know, it's very egotistical situation for them. And they know that they're eligible, and therefore you're just one choice in his plethora of many. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. Very well put. And it's always good to hear. I know you have your daughters, and you grew up around a lot of females from the time you were a young boy to the time that you have become a man. So a lot of insight in your observations, you know, observing women, of course, you from a man's point of view, which you make a note of in your book. And so you're looking at a woman or a little girl from a male's point of view, and then you're also looking at men from the man's point of view. So that in itself brings benefits. Certainly a woman may have some other different points on the same things because she's looking through a different lens. So very, very helpful, beneficial things here from you, Michael, and very candid and forthcoming and honest, and I can hear the wisdom in you coming out. So, Michael, tell us, for the women here at Off the Shelf who are interested, where are the good men? Since your book is titled, Where are these good men?
I believe that the good men are in the same men that you're looking at daily. But I believe that most women are looking at them through shades of learned discrimination and through shades of, you know, status quo, and, you know, they're programmed in their mind what they want to see, but no one's remembering what they actually feel and what they need. They're two different things. You know, I believe as I've gone through my life and I've set goals for myself, looking back, you know, I remember the date when I've sat down and I've set goals. And then one day I've actually written them down and on a piece of paper and put it away. And years later, I would stumble on it. Now, I remember when I was writing that, how I felt and what I thought these things would make me feel. And I remember finding that note and reading it back to myself. And I said, I've accomplished all these things. Well, why don't I have the feeling that I thought they would bring to me? And I've decided that I've come to the conclusion that it's the feeling that I need. That is what I want to envelop in myself when I get to a certain point. So it's no longer the things I want to have. It's but the nature of the feeling, the happiness, the joy. That is what I'm seeking. And to me, that is what each woman should be searching for, not so much how it's dressed, what it looks like, how it appears, but start to say to yourself in an honest way, what it is I really want. You know, okay, So who am I pleasing? Why am I looking for this guy when in my heart this is what I need? Why am I comparing what I want with what my girlfriend has when that's her thing? You understand what I'm saying?
I need
to be looking for what I need that will make me feel. And if you begin to examine yourself, I believe women will find that those men have drifted into their lives and drifted off. Just like the UPS FedEx, you're focused on one thing. So when that thing comes into your life, it comes in so gently, you know, like grass grows. You know, there's no fanfare that, you know, it's not like you're going to walk out one morning and you're going to have sod in the most well-manicured lawn. You're just going to walk out one morning and the grass is growing and you go, oh, my lawn looks beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That's how life is. It's very gradual. You know, spectacular things happen, but to life, those things are normal. So spectacular people come into your life in that same normal way. You know, and I believe that women have to begin to open their eyes and to look at everything around them. Become aware of the people in your life. Sometimes it's your buddy, it's your boy buddy, the guy who you're telling everything, the one who you can call up at any time and listen. Sometimes that guy is the guy that is provided for you. Sometimes it's that guy you can't stand because every time you see him, you roll your eyes at him. So he doesn't know any better but to you know, hiss his teeth at you and go, you know, out of here, you think you're all that. It's because they're not open to who's there. Nobody's going to mystically appear out of the air. You know, he's not going to walk home and he's standing on your steps waiting. That's not how it happens. It happens in a very natural process. You decide it happens.
Yeah,
you decide.
Go ahead. Okay.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I agree with you, and not only just in relationships, but with a lot of things, and I do think that things are created in the spiritual realm, but I do agree, and I kind of was sitting over here chuckling as you were talking, because I think sometimes we get so focused on things like, I think of the show The Secret, I think of positive affirmations and the vision boards, and those do work because I think things are created in the spiritual realm. But I think for us to constantly expect the big drum roll when something great happens, I agree with you. I don't think that is the way life is so often. And if the big drum roll's not there, we think, well, you know, this isn't it.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't it. So I was happy to hear you bring out that point in your response. Go ahead.
I also believe that I've affirmed that men exist in two roles. Now, men, I believe a man has what I call, if you're familiar with the cartoon character Superman, you know, he has an alter ego, which is called Clark Kent. And that is, you know, in his alter ego as Clark Kent, he's a bungling, clumsy, geekish dude. When he transforms into, you know, his Mr. Universe physique, which is the Superman, when, you know, when he dons the S on his chest and, you know, he becomes a superhero, he has supervision, he has super strength, and, you know, he's just this magnificent specimen of a man. I believe that we all men have that. The key is to see if you could find a man when he is in his Clark Kent mode. When he's in his Clark Kent mode, his defenses are down, all right? If you go out at night and you see men all dressed up, you can't tell who works on Wall Street from who doesn't.
That's true.
Unless you work on Wall Street and you just have that extra knack of picking out the little idiosyncrasies, or you can engage them in conversation and then hence find out that they're not from that part of, you know, the economy. They don't work in that part of the economy. But what I'm saying is men know what women are looking for, and they're don that face, that persona, and they appear. So because of the fact that you're locked in on this, they know what you're locked in on. Women scream, they're looking for this, they're looking. So men go out and they acquire those parts of personality, and they custom fit themselves into it. So, you know, as the night falls, they become those people, and they appear where you go looking for them. And you're constantly disappointed because you're going, but he looks like that, and only to find that he's not that, which doesn't mean that he's a bad person. Maybe he's just preparing himself. He's just making himself the proper bait so you can see him. Right? But if you are to find a man and to get at him, you have to try to find men in their clumsy, day-to-day, low-effort existence. In other words, you have to stop looking in places where they know you're looking for them. And begin to look in places where they don't expect you to see them. A guy wandering to a store, you know, through the men's section of Macy's, you know, he's intent on finding a shirt. He's intent on finding a tie, you know. But when eye candy walks by, he's totally zoned, regardless of what he's doing. His eyes will just change direction, and he'll focus in on you and forget what he's doing and walk by to check you out, see what you look like. Whatever. Women have to find those places where men are. Their guard is down, and they're beginning to you catch them by surprise. The guy who works for UPS and wears this brown uniform all day, if you see him at a big function at night, you know, depending on whether it's an urban function where he might have his Yankee hat and his big diamond chain with big cross, which is like 6 months to 8 months salary, and whatever. He'll appear just like the other guy because that's how you exist in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you see him at a function, you know, and, you know, he's well-dressed in a suit, you can't determine what men are by what they wear. You have to find them in a more natural environment, a grocery store, the guy who's holding the door for you at the 7-Eleven. You know, the guy who's dropping his kid off at daycare or picking him up or at Little League soccer. You have to find men doing the better things that men do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's a very good point, to see a person not when they have their game face on, I guess, when they're more their natural, authentic self. There's a couple of things I want to touch on before we close, as we've got 17 minutes left in the show, so our listeners can get the most out of the interview. Again, we're speaking with Michael Marklin, the author of Why the Hell Can I Find a Good Man? His book is available at bookstores, online at Amazon.com. And please visit Michael online at Michael Eric. Eric is spelled E-R-I-C. Michael Eric Marklin, M-A-R-K-L-A-N-D. Michael spelled the way it sounds, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. www.michaelericmarklin.com. Please stop over and visit him and get a copy of his book, Why the Hell Can I Find a Good Man? Again, available through bookstores and online at Amazon.com. You touched on this briefly earlier, Michael. I wanted to ask you, what do you mean when you say that to find the man you desire, you must understand the woman you are?
It's the same basic premise of, stop hurting yourself into being a woman and shed that plural personality and embrace your individual self as a being, as a whole being. You know, you have to take your broom, put on your apron, get your vacuum cleaner, and go into your mind and sternly go there and begin to evict all the thought patterns that other people have placed there as to who you are as a woman. You have to begin to dust and throw out all these notions that your mother has put there that doesn't work for you, that your friend is putting there that doesn't work for you, that a broken relationship has left there that is no longer relevant. You have to begin to glory in yourself as a person. You have to recognize your individual femininity. You have to recognize what is your personal allure. The reason if I was to identify what my intentions were for the book to do for a woman, it would begin something like this. It would say, Number one, to identify your own needs and redesign a plan to fulfill those needs as a person. The second thing would be to recognize your own toxic thought patterns that make you an easy prey for men, right? And to learn behaviors that will stop men from taking control of your mind from the very first date. And also from that very first date, to learn how to screen men so that you don't waste your time and end up with all this emotional baggage in your mind room, in your personal space, that are cluttering up your mind so you can't think and find who you really are.
Okay,
and
I think those...
So go ahead.
Go ahead, Michael.
And to begin to negotiate healthy terms for yourself. First, you have to negotiate with your ego as to what it is you want, and you have to say, no, I want what I want. This is what makes me feel good. No, I don't like this. And no, yes, it works for Sheila, and yes, it works for Renee, but that doesn't work for me. I just want a guy who loves me. I want a guy who will come home to me. I don't need this, you know, or I don't need this. I just want somebody who recognizes me for me, who can let me moan and groan and be a woman when I'm a woman, and who can, you know, whatever. Yes, I'm willing to participate. I don't have to sit around and wait for a man who's going to come and fulfill me financially. I have my own. I could contribute. So why do I need to wait for a guy who's going to make my household $150,000 when together we can make our household $120,000? Why do I have to begin to look for that guy in that bracket? Who am I? What do I want?
Okay.
And yes, this is what I want. And let me glory in myself, and let me go out and seek my individual needs and have those fulfilled by whomever God has for me.
And then again, it sounds like what you're saying is the stronger each of us are as men and women, and the more we know ourselves, the better we're going to attract better people into our lives, only because we have become better, or I would say more awakened to our true selves, and we will probably attract other people who are more awakened to their true selves and not just playing a game of relationships. In 1992, there was a book. It was very, very popular. That came out, Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus.
Yes,
it was written
absolutely.
By John Gray, and he was trying to say from his experiences. And he had been a priest, and then he left the priesthood, and he I believe he is married today. But just different things he noticed, that women and men communicate differently. What would you say, Michael, are 3 to 5? I'll say 3 because we only have about 12 minutes left. What are about 3 key ways that you would say that men communicate in that are different from how women communicate?
Well, first of all, I think that women are estranged in this society right now. Women are estranged from who they were meant to be. They've isolated themselves from the power of who they are by being in the so-called quote unquote man's world, and they have to take on stresses that were naturally men's maybe 50 years ago. So women have given up that intuitive way of communicating and adapted the language, body language, the their own spiritual language in fulfilling their needs, and they're communicating with men on an equal like men. And I believe that's a brainwashing that has gone on through society over time. In terms of communicating the differences, men, as we know, men are not geared to long-term discussion over and over of the same things. They just want to fix things. If you have a problem and you go into a man with it, rather than beat around the bush, you come in and you say, you know, honey, he gypped me at $20. I just realized that I overspent for this. Rather than saying, really, babe, you know, you know, well, next time let's look for coupons and let's look for this and let's really, you know, get that together and when you go there so you can feel fulfilled. He's not going to say that. He doesn't want to hear that silly argument about $20. What he's going to do is he's going to open his wallet and he's going to give you $20 and he's going to go, here's $20. Now shut up, go in the kitchen and do what you're doing, because I don't want to hear that. That's what he's saying. What he really means is, My woman is tore up about $20. That's what he's hearing. If I give her these $20, she'll stop talking. And when she stops talking, I can go into my space and renew my energy by doing what I do. So he'll always try to play.
I'm sorry. You know, it almost sounds like a man doesn't want to communicate then. What can I do to shut her up?
Exactly. But it's still her place to moan and whine. She has to do that. And some of that is not meant for her.
How is that healthy? You don't even want to talk to the woman. It's like, what can I do to shut her up now?
Studies have shown that all of the things that women need to be resolved cannot be resolved with a man. That is why your clique of girlfriends is so very important. It's very important that you have this what men would consider idle chatter, you know, among yourselves, or cackling, as it would, you know, if you observe other species, you have to have this cackling. You have to talk about the things, the issues. There are certain things about the children that a man can never talk about. You know, women are the bearers of children. They're the mothers of nations. So men are just cooperators, so to speak, in the process. So there are certain things that women have to communicate between themselves. And you could talk a man blue. He'll sit on the couch. He'll straight face you. And he'll know the score on the TV. He'll turn it down. He'll mute it. And he'll still know the score. And he'll placate you by pretending that he's listening to you, which is some of the times is just what we need to do. We need to play out those roles. And if we understand that that's who we are, then we don't ask each other to do things that we're not designed to do. And, you know, I believe that is the biggest problem in terms of communicating. And one of the lines in my press release, it says, we have to stop jumping into cars and relationships with strangers. You know, and that, I'm just talking about dating. You don't know, so you have to get to know the man that you're going to involve, you're going to intersect your life with. And you have to understand, is this someone who has any of the skills that are required to manage who I am as a person? You know, and sometimes, you know, there are factors, age factors are involved. So in one of the chapters, which is called, you know, the 5 to 7 year rule, I state that any woman needs to probably count up about 5 to 7 years, add that to her age, and look in that age group to find a man who is even beginning to come to the emotional maturity of being able to handle a woman's psyche in terms of what she needs. So looking among your peers might be one of the biggest, your age peers, your age group might be one of the biggest mistakes women make in terms of trying to communicate with men on a general or seeking a mate or a partner.
Okay, so perhaps a man who is older than you, but the example you gave, and I've heard that said before, men like to fix things, they don't like to have lengthy discussions. It almost sounds like in a relationship, I think that people would be communicating with each other. If men don't want to talk, then that's a huge gap there. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to talk, if that's what a relationship consists of, mm-hmm. communicating. If a man doesn't want to talk, then that's a huge, huge gap there. So that mm-hmm. gap, there has to be a way to close that gap up.
And that's what I'm saying. We're strangers. We need to investigate to see who is best suited to fit that role. Because the guy who looks best on your arm might not be the guy who wants to talk to you or has any time to communicate. But, you know, you're talking to your guy's fixing your sink. He's a plumber. He's laid out under the sink, and you're talking, and you get to talking about all these things, and you're like, oh, my God, this guy is really a great conversationalist. You have to begin to change the stature of the things, the requirements you have, and put the ones that you need higher on the totem pole than the ones that you want.
Okay. We only have about 5 minutes left, and I want to make sure our listeners, again, get as much from this interview as possible here with Michael Marklin on here on Off the Shelf. He's the author, again, of Why the Hell Can I Find a Good Man? Michael is online at www.michaelericmarkland.com. That's MichaelEricMarkland.com. MichaelEricMarkland.com. His books are for sale with retailers and online through Amazon.com. Michael, I wanted to ask you if you have any upcoming events or book signings, readings that you're going to be appearing so our listeners could support you.
I actually have a couple of appointments that I've had to snow date because of the weather in the past week. So I do have a book signing in Harlem on January 9th at Reels Lounge. It's 146th Street and Lenox Avenue. I have a couple of other radio interviews that I'm due to reschedule at the moment. So if you, if you can, friend me on Facebook, Michael Markland. The picture of my book cover will appear, Why the Hell Can't I Find a Good Man from a Man's Point of View. Friend me. I update my Facebook page daily. So with my events and so forth. Failing that, you can email me at MichaelEricMarklin at gmail.com or MichaelEricMarklin at yahoo.com. I'll gladly keep you informed as to, my progress with my book and my events as we go along.
All right. I was curious, what has been the reaction? We only have 3 minutes left. What has been the reaction of your children to your book?
I have 3 boys and 1 girl. My boys are, my children somewhat overachievers. My son is a nurse who just graduated from NYU. My middle son just graduated from Juilliard earlier in May. My daughter just
Congratulations.
Graduated. Thank you so much. My daughter just graduated from St. Francis Prep. So they're overachievers. They've kind of been born into they compete with each other, so they have so much going on in their life that this little thing in my life is like, oh, Daddy wrote a book. My daughter is, she's particularly tickled by it because her girlfriends are going like, what did your father know about those things? And, I didn't even know your daddy knew those guy things and so forth and so on. So, my other son is overseas in Jamaica. He's a chef at a major hotel. They're just, congratulations. I try to get them involved as much as I can, but I believe because of the nature of the book, they kind of took a wait and see. So when they came to the book launch party, they were so surprised that so many people showed up and they were actually interested in anything I might have to say. So, it's had a major effect on my sisters, though, and on the women folk in my family who've always encouraged me to put something down in writing. So it has had an effect in that age group. My sisters are in their 30s and so forth. It's had a very positive effect overall in the family.
That's good to hear, Michael. As we're wrapping up, we're coming down to the last minute. I want to stop and thank Michael Marklin. He is the author of the book, Why the Hell Can I Find a Good Man? A native of Jamaica, now living in New York City. He's a single parent father. He has a daughter who is in high school, and as you heard him say, his children have gone on to do quite well. He's grown up around women from the time he was a little boy and has nieces and his daughters and his sisters. Michael is online at www.michaelericmarklin.com. His books are available at retailers and online at amazon.com. I encourage you to get a copy of his book as he's candid. And he approaches this from a point of strength, saying to a woman, to know who you are so you can get what you want. And I like that approach to be strong in yourself so you can attract somebody who would be best suited for you. So thank you again, Michael, for joining us here at Off the Shelf, taking time out of your busy schedule. To our listeners, please go check him out online at michaelericmarkland.com so you can learn about his upcoming events and go out and support him and his book. Please visit me online at www.chistell.com and get a copy of my new book, Long Walk Up, which is in bookstores now, or you can order directly off the website at www.chistell.com. Please tune in next Saturday. We're going to have an entertainment attorney that we're going to bring to you next Saturday, Tanya Marie Evans-Wells. And we will continue to bring you editors, writers, publishers, literary agents, and entertainment attorneys and other movers and shakers in the book business to help to bring you what you need as a writer and a reader as you continue to move forward. Always remember that you are incredibly valued, loved, and truly blessed. Bye for now. Michael, I'll send you an email.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.